This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
You ready? On the count of three. One, two, three. Cut that ribbon. We are now officially open in Londonderry. All right. You can't imagine how many people are here for this grand opening, which shows you the love and the popularity of the Red Arrow Diner over the last almost 100 years. I think the original one was back in 1922. Carol's family bought it back in the 80s. And so you can see there's five generations of people that have enjoyed Red Arrow. And now finally the third restaurant open here right off exit 5 at 93 in Londonderry. We have members of the Chamber of Commerce. Dave is the brand new manager. How are things going after a couple of weeks?
Things are awesome. We couldn't ask for a better opening right now, and we're so thankful for all the customers that's come in and their patience, because it has been extremely busy.
I've been in line here today. I don't know if it's because of the coming to see you or because the food is so good, but what a great grand opening. It's been a lot of energy, and the food is still getting out, though, to the customers.
Oh, yes, it's getting out, and the lines are getting longer, and we ask that they just keep coming.
All right, I'm going to let you get back because you got a big restaurant to run. Thank you, Dave. So we have folks in line. We have reporters here. We have paparazzi, and we are broadcasting live, as we will, until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Carol Lawrence, just a couple of moments ago, did the official ribbon cutting, which was pretty impressive, I have to say. I did not expect to see entertainment tonight and extra here, but Mario Lopez took his shirt off, and that's what probably brought all these people, and I'm not really sure exactly what happened. But, wow, that was a pretty good crowd, Carol.
I'm gonna think it was crazy, isn't it? Isn't it nuts in here? It really is. It's awesome.
You cut that thing.
Well, Tyler cut it.
Was that your son?
That was my son, Tyler.
That was your son. Huh?
Yes, yes. Tyler cut it. So yeah, very exciting. Very, very exciting.
Is it this busy every day?
You know, it has been since we opened, which is, you know, it's been fantastic. Mm-hmm. Londonderry has welcomed us with open arms. It's been great. It's been really great.
Well, it's very encouraging, and we have so many local, I would say, dignitaries here today, and they've all got busy schedules, so I think it's a nice tribute to the Red Arrow brand, as I was saying just a moment ago, that through generations people have enjoyed the work of the restaurant. More recently with your family, what was it, in the 80s that your family bought it? That
took it no, around? No, no. Well, 87, yes. 87.
That's what I was thinking, this past 25 years here.
Yep.
Yeah, but before that, there were a couple other families, right, for those that maybe don't know the history?
I'm actually the fifth owner of the Red Arrow since 1922. It started with the Lamontagne family, and I'm the fifth owner. Yeah.
Have you started thinking about how you're going to celebrate the 100th
anniversary? You know what? We have been kind of talking about that. You know, with the Palace celebrating their 100 years, and, you know, so, yeah.
It's 7 years away.
I know.
God willing, we'll all be here.
I know.
I notice you've got a big platter of pink Food for Thought with Carol spatulas here.
We
now, what would one have to do to come get one of these?
Well, you know, really just come up and ask for one.
Really?
Yeah. Simple. I have
so
plenty
easy.
Of them.
Are you always as
easy? Well, Mike, what should we do?
Oh, we'll figure something out.
Okay, figure
That's
something
what radio's out. All about. Let's figure out things going on here. Well, let's see. Who are some of the local dignitaries here that might be in the room?
Well, we're going to be talking with Mike right here, Mike Skelton. He is the president of the Manchester Chamber.
So now, are we going to make him wait, or do we want to jump in and talk with him right away?
I think we're going to chat with him right away.
Sure.
I think so.
He looks like a hungry young lad, probably wants to get the heck out of here and go to a booth and get something to eat.
That sounds great.
Yeah, see?
I had to stand by the window over here where they were serving food, and I was thinking of jumping on the frying baskets and taking yeah. over there.
Mike, do you want to try? Go ahead.
Really?
Go ahead.
Have you ever seen pies the size of what the Red Arrow serves?
I have not. And I've never had a Twinkie that is better than
Diner
the Red Arrow.
Diner Fingers.
She gets sued by hostess every time somebody uses the word Twinkie.
Yeah.
You're going to put them out of business. Right. How will that feel, Mr. Chamber of Commerce President?
Well, I mean, but they're obviously the original. I mean, the inspiration.
Yes. So for sure. Yeah. For sure.
Rachel. Yeah, I mean, Rachel, you were shipping them all over the country, right, Carol?
We still do. When
Hostess closed down a couple years ago?
Yes. And you know, they showcased it on the Diners, Drive-ins, and Dairy. So... we know when they're repeating it because we'll start getting phone calls to ship them across the country.
Oh,
that's when we know. It's like, oh, we must have been on Diners, Drive-ins, and Dives. So, yeah, we sell over 500 of them just in our Manchester location each week.
How many?
500.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah,
very
it's crazy.
Cool. And you've got them packaged, you know, in the cellophane. So you don't have to buy a box, buy two or three or 50.
You can buy them
singly,
six, or a dozen, or as many as you want, you know. Diane Sawyer's come in and requested a couple dozen at a time.
She has?
Yes.
Wow. Aren't you the name dropper today?
Yeah, I know, really. Huh?
Guy Fieri, Diane Sawyer, Mario Lopez. No, I was the one that dropped Mario Lopez.
Yeah, you did that one.
Turned out
you said he was here with his shirt off. I haven't seen that yet.
No, it was some truck driver that was at the Sunoco station.
Oh, gosh.
I got that totally wrong. I'm sorry about that. So is this the best part of your job, right, is coming around to business openings?
Absolutely. And in particular, it's a really proud day for us, I think, too, because the Red Arrow and Carol have been such great Manchester business community members, active members of the chamber and the community for so many years, and to now see the business growing beyond the city. Of course, they have location in Milford, now down here in Londonderry. I think it's a very proud moment for all of us. So, you know, we're really happy from the chamber to see our members being successful and growing. So I'm just thrilled for them. And this is my first time in today to see the location, to see how busy it was, is obviously a great sign. So congratulations, Carol.
Thank you so much. Thank you very, very much. It means a lot. It means a lot to all of us. You know, the help here, you know, my employees wouldn't be possible without the employees and, you know, my family and, you know, friends and everybody. So thank you.
And I really just personally think that I love coming to diners. And I think the diner experience is something that is so American and so unique to our part of the country, and the fact that you're keeping that alive and you're helping grow that in our region, I think is wonderful and something that we're really proud of and happy to support you in. So congratulations to your team. This is a great location. I think you guys are going to do amazing, particularly with all the expansions happening along I-93. So best of luck to you guys.
Well, thank you very, very much. I appreciate that. That's Mike Skelton, president of the Manchester Chamber.
Is this diner open 24 hours?
24/7, just like 24/7. Yeah,
right.
24
so
hours, 7
now,
days a week.
Is Milford also 24?
Yeah, all three of them.
All three of them.
All
are.
Three of them.
So no matter where you are, no matter what you've been doing, you can always find some terrific comfort food at a great price and warm smiles to serve you at any of the three Red Arrows.
That is correct.
Do I get the job?
Yeah, really. When do you want to start? Go slap an apron on.
Okay.
I think we need to take a break, right? Need to go to break. We are live at the Red Arrow Diner in Londonderry. We just had our ribbon cutting, and we have a whole lot more of the show to come up. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome back to Food for Thought. I'm Jeannie Lester, and joining me right now is Mike Morin, and we are just so pleased to be talking with Will Stewart, the president of the Londonderry Chamber of Commerce. Thank you so much for joining us, Will.
Thank you very much, Jeannie.
Well, it's an exciting event that we've got going on here, of course, and there's been lots of, anticipation and all the bugs get worked out in those first couple of weeks, which I don't think there were many, and you can see with the lines and the volume of folks that are here, a big boon, and we've got some great neighbors right nearby. Talk a little bit about what this means for helping to build up yet another piece of Londonderry's mecca of commerce.
Well, it certainly is coming into being, I think. Particularly here at the Exit 5 area, which I think in, you know, 5, especially 10 years' time, is going to be maybe almost unrecognizable. And I think that you know, this, the Red Arrow Diner combined with the, you know, state liquor store and some of the new you know, gas stations that are coming in is just kind of the harbinger of things to come. And with Pettingill Road really taking off, you're kind of on the other side over near the airport, you're going to start to see the growth really coming in, you know, filling in, you know, the gaps between there. And you know, one of our other members, the Sleep Inn, you know, on the other side of the interstate was just here, and you know, they're really getting excited about that too. I think it's going to be, you know, kind of a rising tide lifts all boats, and everyone's getting very, very excited.
Yeah, and there's been, obviously, Red Arrow is a big name in itself, as are some of the other merchants that you've talked about. What do you see for changes in the shape of what Londonderry is for folks over the next few years?
Well, I think it's really going to, you know, the character of the community is going to evolve, as it has, I think, you know, for the past, you know, 10 or 20 years. Again, with Pettingill Road coming in, it's you're going to see a lot more industry and commercial activity, particularly with regard to the airport. And then you're going to see more, I think, retail activity on this end of town. You know, I think it'll still always kind of that, you know, residential suburban charm. But as you've seen, you're really over the past few decades, it's evolved from really a more of an agricultural community, which you still have some of those, you know, facets with the apple orchards and such, you know, still all around town, you know, to more of a, you know, suburban bedroom community, with a lot of people working both in Manchester and heading down to Massachusetts. And now, you know, it's evolving again with, you know, kind of more industrial and commercial, you know, mix in there, and I think it'll be a very healthy mix, you know, in 10 years' time.
Well, let me ask you, is that a big challenge amongst the business people and those that run the town, is to keep that balance? Certain faction wants to keep it agriculture, yet you realize you need the commerce to keep the town growing and to pay the bills and such and keep the tax base at least as reasonable as possible.
Correct. It's a delicate balance.
Sure.
And you want to retain, you have the best of all worlds with and minimize, you know, some of the downsides that, you know, all of those can come into play. So I think that'll be something that town manager Kevin Smith and those on the town council will be grappling with in the years to come, and the planning boards and zoning boards, to try and retain that, you know, that the character that Londonderry has and all of the great assets, you know, while being able to take advantage of all of the added industry and you know, the tax benefits that will come along with that to the residents who live here.
We're talking with Will Stewart, who's president of the Londonderry Chamber of Commerce, along with his counterpart in Manchester, Mike Skelton, was here just a couple of moments ago for the ribbon cutting. My question is, how did this particular part go so long with the development? Was there a family holding on to it, or was the right price never mentioned? Because suddenly you've got the liquor store, you've got the Red Arrow. Of course, the gas station's been here a long time.
Right, and I'm afraid I can't give you a great answer. I'm you know, unaware of the history myself. I just took over the Greater Derry Londonderry Chamber about 6 months ago, so I'm still learning all about the community myself. But you're right, it does pose an interesting question, because in a lot of, you know, in most cases, you know, exits on interstates, you know, are kind of prime real estate areas, and this sat for so long, you know, with just really a few things kind of here or there. But you know, regardless of the past, the future is here now, and I think it's going to be drastically different in the years to come.
What does the airport mean to Londonderry in terms of, you know, the economy and the business it brings in? I mean, I know the whole, I don't think the whole airport is in Londonderry proper, right? Does it straddle the two towns?
It does. About 75% of the airport is in the town of Londonderry. Mm-hmm. And as for what it means, it's huge, just absolutely huge. Not just the airport itself, but all kind of the ancillary businesses that are around it, from hotels like the Sleep Inn to the industries that are located around it, so that they can, you know, the companies can get their employees and products, you know, to and from market. And I think that's, it's a huge economic driver, no doubt, for the entire state, but especially for the greater Londonderry area.
And that's interesting because, of course, as you mentioned, the airport is that driver, and kind of you go through Londonderry or nearby to do any of those businesses and traveling that you're going to do from the airport. I had occasion to come to Londonderry for a class that I was taking about a year ago. And honestly, it was that kind of experience where, okay, where has Londonderry been all my life? And I think it's once you come into Londonderry and you realize what it has in that combination that we spoke about. You know, I drove around some of the neighborhoods. They're beautiful. The homes are nice. What you can get for your money is not, you know, way out of line. Mm-hmm. So you can buy a nice home. You can purchase a nice piece of property in a neighborhood that you'd want to live in. And there are these businesses that sort of would surprise you, kind of popping up. What do you see? Do you see any potential or any desires for kind of more destinations, to bring people into Londonderry, because all it takes is just coming here once, and then you think, okay, A, it's not as far away from everything else that you think it is, mm-hmm. and B, it's just a beautiful little town with that character that, you mentioned earlier.
Right, and you know, I definitely think there is room for that, and that's something that the Greater Derry Londonderry Chamber of Commerce wants to really kind of take upon itself to help promote tourism and to really help everybody else see. You know, those of us who are here already know what a great place it is. But I think Londonderry, like a lot of New Hampshire towns, kind of suffers from, kind of best kept secret syndrome. Mm-hmm. And I think that, not to delve too deep into the psyche of New Hampshire, but I think a lot of New Hampshire towns, are very much kind of the old Yankee mentality. We're going to focus on what we do and, focus on our business, and other people can focus on their business. But on the one of the cons of that is that nobody's tooting their own horn as much as they should from a tourism and marketing and kind of town branding standpoint. So there's a lot of towns that have a lot of great things going on, a lot of places like the Red Arrow or, Max Apples or any of those type places. But a lot of people don't know that they're there. And so that's one of the roles that the Chamber wants to kind of really step into and really kind of help promote Londonderry and the surrounding towns and all of the great things that we have around here.
You're listening to The Pulse, 107.7 WTPL. This is Food for Thought every weekday between noon and 2 with Carol and Jeannie. So one of the big things that I think we talked about, the important business driver of the airport, talk about 93. Now that the finishing aspects are within sight, it's been a multi-year project. That's also a big advantage for Londonderry, another plus to be here.
It is, and it's going to get it's going to be an even bigger advantage in the years to come. I spoke just a couple of months ago with former DOT Commissioner Chris Clement before he stepped down, and he was still saying right up to the day he left that the interstate will be widened. The widening will be completed from exit 3 where it is now up to the 293 split by 2020. So less than 5 years from now, you're going to see again. You are a game changer coming along, and I think in conjunction with the airport and with the kind of the exit 4A Woodmont Common project that looks to be kind of slowly moving forward, kind of getting back on track now that the Market Basket issue was resolved. And of course, the DeBulis family is a big player in the Woodmont Commons area, which would be between exits 4 and 5. All of that combined, I think you're going to. This area is really poised for explosive growth, and I don't use that word lightly. I think it's going to be huge.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Will, about the 4A possibilities. I've been hearing about that for years. I'm a fairly new resident in that area, and so I didn't know it was still being talked about. I was aware that that large tract of land is owned by the DeMoulas family, mm-hmm. and I think it was earmarked for a multiple use, residential, recreational, and retail. Is that still kind of the game plan you're looking at, or is it not that far along?
As I understand it, and I'm not privy to all the inside conversations, but from what I hear, that is still the plan. Very kind of that multi-use description that you just gave, I think is pretty accurate. Done, I think, over 20 years ultimately in multiple phases that will be going in. But the funding is there on the state level. It is part of the the gas tax that came into place back in last July, funded the expansion of not only the interstate, but also to build the interchange at 4A. What still needs to be resolved is, building kind of the access road that will connect, the interchange at 4A, into, and it'll be primarily into Derry, kind of the Shenito-Folsom Road area, which is about a mile, 2 mile stretch.
Thank you for pronouncing that, by the way. I've been on other radio shows and we've had people call in and say, how do you pronounce that word that starts with TS?
I've heard people say Shenito. I've heard them say Shenado.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the official designation is.
Yeah, exactly. Let's call the whole thing off.
Yeah.
We're talking with Will Stewart, the president of the Londonderry Chamber of Commerce. And, Will, obviously it's important and helpful and an honor to have you here at a ribbon cutting, and you do that for new businesses. And that's the exciting epitome of the culmination of all their work in forging a new business. What kind of relationship, or what does that relationship look like after the ribbon cutting, after the excitement of opening has died down? What kind of a relationship do you and other members of the chamber have with businesses in the area?
Well, the you know, a Chamber of Commerce in general, I know you spoke with Mike Skelton in Manchester, and it's, you know, very similar there, and as well as other chambers of commerce, but we really exist to help businesses promote themselves and the community as a whole. Again, recognizing, you know, that a rising tide does in fact lift all boats. So you know, we help our members, which includes the Red Arrow Diner, you know, to really, you know, market and promote themselves within the community. Not that the Red Arrow needs too much help there, as we can see, 2 weeks in and they're already packed. But really to help them to, you know, kind of raise their profile and give them opportunities to interact with other businesses. And I was able to introduce Ed Frederick, the general manager of the Sleep Inn, again, right across the way here on the other side of the interstate, you know, to Carol. And you know, they both said, oh, I've been meaning to get over here and talk to you. So, you know, the Chamber is really good at helping fostering those kind of connections and bringing people together. So I think it's really tough, and I know, you know, Carol is a prime example, is, you know, you're always busy running your business. I mean, when you're a business owner, that's a 24/7 job. And, you know, sometimes it's not as easy as you'd like to be able to stop what you're doing and, you know, get out and meet people and things that would be good for your business, but you're just so focused on your business that the Chamber really is there to help foster those connections and bring people together.
All right, we have just a couple moments left with Will Stewart, president of the Londonderry Chamber of Commerce, here on The Pulse. My question to you is, this is a food show, so do you cook?
I mainly eat.
That's important. That's good an answer. Important partnership there.
Yeah, my wife lets me into the kitchen, you know, a little bit. I think she doesn't fully trust me, but I have a few pasta dishes and a few Mexican dishes that I can, I think I can put together well, if I do say so myself, but I will be the first to admit my repertoire is pretty limited.
Well, mine was too at your age, and then I found myself divorced and needing to learn how to cook, and when you're dating women at my particular age at that time, they were all fairly accomplished and didn't want to eat, you know, at Wendy's, so it kind of made me learn a little bit about food, and actually, I'm glad it did. I'm not wishing that on you, but now keep that repertoire growing. It really is a great way to bring a family together, I think.
Indeed it is. We definitely eat together every night at the table at our household, and that's a priority, one of our biggest priorities each day.
Boy, there's fewer families doing that these days, and sad to say it shows, doesn't it, in some venues. And when you're out dining, do you have a favorite type of cuisine that you find yourself and your wife going to?
We like Indian food.
Yes.
Yeah, and even, you know, I think one of my proudest accomplishments as a father, I have a 3-year-old son, is that he also loves Indian food. And, you know, I found that, you know, I should say he does love Indian food, but I can't say, you know, hey, would you like, you know, this palak paneer, which is kind of a spinach sauce. And for him, it just has to be referred to as green sauce. Yes. Spinach, no thanks, Dad. Green sauce, bring it on. So it's all, again, all in the presentation and marketing, right?
See, I just grew up in the wrong era because, you know, back in the 50s and 60s, you know, the suburbs were sprawling everywhere and moms were staying home and just making the basic meat and potatoes post-World War II food. I mean, I kind of, in a way, wish I could have been growing up now. I don't think I even had Indian food till I moved to New England. And I never had pizza till I was 10. So, you know, it was basically meatloaf.
I'm sorry, Mike.
Yeah, I know.
We're bringing up a fund and a support group. And
yeah, certainly hope so.
Deprived childhood.
Hey, you're ganging up on me.
No, we're sympathizing. Yeah. But you've come light years since then, for sure.
Well, thanks to dating. That really did help.
Good. All right, then I'm going to follow up real quickly on Mike's last question to you, going back to the food realm. Diner food, since we are at a diner, is there anything that really calls to you anytime you're going to get this kind of food?
Well, particularly at the Red Arrow, one of my go-tos is always the pork pie, which is something I never had before I moved to New England.
Sure.
And have become, you know, quite the fan of. My wife is, you know, we're big fans of the Red Arrow, and you know, her go-to, which has become one of my go-tos, is you know, a chicken rice soup and a grilled cheese.
Nice.
But really anything breakfast is always calls my name at diner.
Cool. All right, well, I think we're ready for a break. I want to thank Will Stewart, president of the Londonderry Chamber of Commerce, giving us a lot of information about this great town that, you know, many people drive through but never actually get to sample. And now there's another reason to get off exit 5, and that is the Red Arrow Diner and the New Hampshire State Liquor Store, which is companion together. Will, thank you for being here today. We appreciate you being part of the ribbon-cutting ceremony and sharing a little bit about the good news of Londonderry.
Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
All right. We'll be back with more. Thank you, Will. This is The Pulse, 107.7 WTPL and Food for Thought. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Well, to Food for Thought here on The Pulse. I'm Jeannie Lester, and joining me is Mike Morin. And we are just so excited because every Friday we have now gotten very used to our dose of comedy with Comedy Cold Cuts. And Mike, what do you have for us today?
Well, it's great to be sitting here at the Red Arrow Diner where here in Londonderry, brand new location, as we broadcast live on The Pulse, because you can come in here and get comfort food any time of the day. And that would include things like pancakes and waffles. And here in New England, you have to have real syrup. Again, my poor late mother, you know, I'm kind of complaining about her cooking. I never tasted real syrup again until I moved to New England because it was Log Cabin, it was Aunt Jemima, it was Mrs. Butterworth, it was all that corn fructose crap that they still pass off as syrup, but of course they can't do that anymore without saying, you know, imitation flavor or whatever. So thank God I got real maple syrup in my life, and this is Maple Syrup Month in New Hampshire. Actually, the promotion kicks off tomorrow, and in just a moment I'm going to tell you about something that amazed me. It happened only a couple of years ago. There was a massive maple syrup heist. I don't know if anybody heard about that or remembers it. It didn't really make the news, but as I dug into it, it's a pretty amazing story on how it happened, and it was pretty bizarre.
Wow.
I'll share that in a few moments. But as the title suggests, Comedy Cold Cuts, we're going to begin our first segment with a guy who does a lot of food comedy. We've had him on before on Cold Cuts, Jim Gaffigan, and he's visiting, well, these are popular down south, the Waffle House.
Speaking of diapers, I went to Waffle House last night. Tell you, I thought the IHOP was a dump until I went into a Waffle House. Wow, they're not even trying in there. Here's something you'll never hear in a Waffle House. Nice job cleaning up! Now, if you've never been to a Waffle House, just imagine a gas station bathroom that sells waffles. And you've been to a Waffle House. I love Waffle House. And not just because watching someone fry an egg while they're smoking reminds me of my dad. The people in there. It's like a white trash convention. Or for me, a family reunion. It's so white trash in there, it makes the IHOP appear international. I've seen a gun 5 times in my life. 3 of them have been in Waffle House. It's definitely a dangerous feel to them. You know, even the Waffle House sign looks like a ransom note. There's always a letter out. Occasionally it'll be the W, so it'll read Awful House. That's where I want to go at 2 a.m. That's when everyone goes. Their slogan should be, it's 2 a.m., still time to make one more bad decision. You go in there, everyone's drunk. You know everyone's drunk in Waffle House because they have pictures of the food on the menu. How drunk do you have to be to not remember what a waffle looks like? Oh yeah, it's like a plaid pancake. I'll have 12 of those for a nickel. You ever go in a Waffle House during the day? That's weird. This place looks familiar. I think I threw up in here. Oh, there it is.
Jim Gaffigan and Waffle House talk. I've never been to one. Jeannie, have you?
I have not. But, you know, it's funny because I used to credit my father with this. He would call it the Awful House, like you just dropped the W.
Seriously?
Yes, and I am sure my father doesn't know who Jim Gaffigan is. So I don't know. Either they're thinking the same or one of them pirated it.
But you know what? I bet the waffles are great, actually, when it comes right down to it. You know,
probably.
And I'm going to guess another big food plate is chicken and waffles. Started seeing that on TV the last couple of years, and it's like I'm trying to put those two together, and I'm just not making the connection.
I'm so glad you brought that up because I did, and I saw that just recently, like yesterday, just a little clip of a show that was coming up, and they were like, yes, we definitely need to have chicken and waffles. I don't understand why that pairing. How did that come to be, and how is that good? What do you do? Put chicken on top? I don't understand. Where's the chicken going?
And I'm going to guess, if you go to a Waffle House, you are not going to get real maple syrup. Because then they'd have to charge you more than a nickel for a dozen pancakes, I would guess. Well, we're here at the Red Arrow Diner. This is a big day. It's the official ribbon cutting ceremony. Happened about an hour ago. I'm with Jeannie Lester right now. And Carol Lawrence, the head honcho of the show, is pretty much floating around and shaking hands. And this is her
her pride and joy. Yeah. So we're happy she can do that while we're doing the thing here. All right, let's talk a little bit more about Maple Syrup on Comedy Cold Cuts here on The Pulse. This is Tony Deo.
My wife's been taking this supplement that's supposed to be good for new mothers that are breastfeeding. When she ordered it online, the comment said, works great. The only downside, makes you smell like maple syrup. Now, we're new parents. We're really barely holding it together. Not really showering all that much. Maple syrup's kind of an upgrade. I started taking it myself. Our apartment smells like a Waffle House.
Here. So we have another clip here in just a moment, but I wanted to share with you a giant maple syrup heist of 2012.
Okay. I can't wait to hear this.
I never heard about this, and as I started poking around this week, since it's Maple Syrup Month in New Hampshire, and the Maple Syrup Weekends are coming up in a couple of weeks, on the morning of July 30th, 2012, an accountant named Michel Gauvreau arrived at the Global Strategic Maple Syrup Reserve. Can you believe there is
Global
one?
Global Strategic, I love it.
Housed in a huge red brick warehouse on the side of Trans-Canada Highway Saint-Louis-de-Blainfeuille. So anyway, what he was this guy who had to go in and audit the inventory.
Okay.
Now, Canada is a massive producer of maple syrup, as we all know. So his job was to go in. There were 16,000 barrels in this particular warehouse, which represented about one-tenth of Quebec's production. So it's all in there, and he goes in, and he starts kind of opening the barrels to check on them, and he's finding out that a bunch of them are empty.
Oh, my goodness.
Or they contain water. So they continue to go through this this process because they're supposed to do an audit to make sure that if it's 16,000 barrels of maple syrup, that's what it is.
Right.
Well, it wasn't. There was a lot of it that had been missing. After notifying the Federation's leaders and returning with them to examine the stockpile, they unscrewed the cap of a full barrel, and then that led to many, many others. Much was thin, clear, and odorless. It was water. 60% or 6 million pounds of syrup had vanished.
Wow.
How the heck does that happen? That's $18 million at then prices.
Yeah.
$18 million, 6 million pounds of syrup out of that warehouse. How does that happen? So the story says siphoning off and transporting that much syrup was no mean feat. It would have taken more than 100 tractor trailers to do it. The question is, how do you do that with today's surveillance and get away with it? They never found it, as far as I know, and all that syrup was gone.
Yeah, and beyond that, how do you do that? I mean, it's not like you're just bringing in your coffee cup, loading it up, and one by one.
I mean,
to get that much, and that can't be the easiest thing to siphon.
Well,
makes people's purpose rather
I'd be sitting there with my mouth under the spigot saying, load me up, baby.
The sugar buzz.
Yeah, got to get that sugar buzz. Yeah. So that was the maple syrup heist, and maybe some people remember it. There was also a time about 8 or 10 years ago when the world almost ran out of maple syrup and prices went sky high. But J-Dog remembers that. But things have returned to normal now, and it's all good in the world of syrup. But that amazed me that anybody could pull that off.
Right.
Yeah, I mean,
undetected.
Why,
it's
how is
not
that
a small,
well, exactly,
easy thing. It's not like you're electronically embezzling, which I don't condone. But that's something you physically have to move.
Yeah, and why has there not been a movie on this? I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
You had all these Ocean's 11. Yeah. All right, so we have one more to go on our segment today about maple syrup. And this one is actually about pancakes, and the comedian here is Kyle Kinane.
I'm trying to be more tolerant, you know. There's too many. Everybody's got their own thing going on. It's a waste of time to not be open-minded and learn these things. I'm trying to be tolerant, but it's difficult. That tolerance, it's tested routinely. I was on a flight going from Denver to Chicago, and halfway through my flight, midair, 35,000 feet, guy sitting next to me starts eating pancakes out of a bag. Not like a Ziploc bag with like a little seal and like a hey, I meant to do this vibe. Like a bag from the store. Not a store that sold pancakes. See what I'm saying? Like a Foot Locker bag. You get me? They're just loose. They're just loose in there. Like bingo balls, just loose. And there's nothing wrong with what he was doing, morally speaking. But you gotta realize that if you do some wackadoo shit, like eat pancakes out of a shoe store bag on an airplane, you're forcing strangers around you into a world of questions they never anticipated they would ever have to ask. First off, how did you get to this point in your life? Where are you going? How do you wind up, if you're on an airplane, you're on there with purpose. You're fighting gravity to travel through the sky to land on another part of the Earth's crust. Nobody's like waking up casually like Amelia Earhart, like, I think I'll take to the skies today. You have purpose. You have reason to fight nature, to go somewhere else. How do you have that purpose in your life, but still do it with hastily packed hobo snacks in your midst? That's not how you catch a plane. You're not like, is this one going southbound? Usually getting to an airport, that's your number one priority in the day. I don't care what happens, I'm gonna get to that airport. I'll lose a hand, I'll fix it when I get there. Just get me to the airport. This guy was number 4 or 5 on his list. This guy was like, I know I got a flight, but it is Tuesday, and you know what happens on Tuesday? Silver dollar flappies, that's what happens. Tuesday is silver dollar flapjack day.
There you go, that's a comedian by the name of Kyle Kinane, Bag of Pancakes, as we celebrate Maple Syrup Month, which starts tomorrow here in New Hampshire and all over probably this part of the world. I don't think, and I could be wrong, I don't think that there's much sap running quite yet. We've had a couple of days in the 50s, which you need several of those days with nights in the 20s to really get things going. So this is going to be a really late season.
Yeah, it is interesting because we had such an unusual winter. And just as you said, that affects everything that's going to happen for sap running and maple syrup production.
Exactly. All right, we got about a minute to go here at the Red Arrow Diner in Londonderry Exit 5. Please come by. Carol Lawrence, the owner, is here. The Pulse is here broadcasting live for another hour. And you get to take the trivia quiz right now today about maple syrup, Jeannie.
All right.
Got to get 2 out of 3,
right.
Correct?
I'm ready.
And Bob Lipman will buy a bottled water.
Excellent.
That's the kind of guy he is. All right, so here is the first one. Maple syrup is roughly 66% sugar. True or false?
I'm going to say it's probably higher than that, but I'll go with the true.
You are correct.
Oh,
you've redeemed yourself. Had a little
feel
trouble.
Feel that water coming. Yeah,
yeah,
I
all right, 66%. All right, the second question. By law in Canada, each person must consume 3.4 gallons of Canadian syrup per year.
I'm going to say false. But I like it.
It's false. By the way, U.S. consumption is only 3 ounces per capita. And finally, Vermont supplies 80% of the world's maple syrup.
Yes,
false.
True.
Canada does. So there it is, ladies and gentlemen, wrapping up our comedy segment today on The Pulse's Food for Thought. We're going to take a quick break on WTPL 107.7 and be right back after news.